Melissa, thank you so much for joining me. So excited to spend some time chatting with you, as always. So thank you for joining with us and sharing your time.
Happy to be here.
Well, I'm always excited to talk to you because I feel like there's always so much to learn from you. And I spend so much time thinking about your business. Obviously, now that we've partnered together between Classic and Lucia, it's always something that's top of mind for us. But also just love hearing about your story beyond just Classic, beyond all of your, accolades and accomplishment. And so I'm really excited to have you kind of chat with us and talk more about your life story, basically.
Thank you. Well, I'm looking forward to a fun afternoon.
Awesome. Well, I want to start from the very beginning. I feel like everyone has a unique story as to how they ended up in the industry or how they got started in life in general. And so I'm really curious if you could talk to us just about your early life, where you grew up, your interests and passions. Was this something you always wanted to do? Who were you growing up? And I want to hear that kind of story inside of you.
So I grew up in a small town in the Northwest, about 20 miles east of Seattle, tucked right into the foothills at the time. Grace, I mean, I think it was when I was a little kid, it was like 7,000 people. So it's small. I have two sisters. We're really spread out in age. So my older sister is 7 years older than me, and my little sister is 10 years younger than me. And I'll probably there's definitely a formative part of me that came from kind of like when she was born in that story. So I'll jump into that later. We lived on this little dead end street, which wouldn't even be part of a bigger story other than when you live on a dead end street, it kind of creates it's there's no going through, right? It's just it kind of encapsulates everybody in the neighborhood. A lot of neighborhood kids, a lot of bike riding. My grandparents lived two doors down from us, and right next to them, there was this couple, and all we ever knew her was as the cookie lady. We knew as kids in the neighborhood, we could knock on her door at any point in time and she had homemade cookies for us. And so it was only years later in my adulthood that I came to find out what their last name is. But we could walk everywhere. All the schools were within walking distance. So it was a really just a easy childhood. My parents were first generation American. They grew up in North Dakota. My grandparents came from Scandinavia. So it was just a really, really very, very simple life. I mean, as it relates even to the travel industry, I don't think I was on an airplane until I was 18 years old, maybe 20 years old when I bought my first airplane ticket. I mean, other than that, vacations were going to and from the family farm in North Dakota.
Wow.
Yeah. In terms of just like interests and passions growing up, we were as a family, my mom stayed home, we were active and, just active in different things within the community, whether it was, little kids soccer or campfire or Girl Scouts. We were a big reading family. We played a lot of games, and that's something I've carried over into my own family. There's always a backgammon board out or a Scrabble board out. A lot of fishing with my dad. It feels like most of the childhood was really spent anticipating fall, which was our big town celebration, as well as Friday night football games. And, then when I was 10, my little sister was born, and my mom really struggled with depression. So when you're asking about passions, I did think about that for a second because, usually it's like, oh, I'm going to, jump and I'm going to be in theater, or I'm going to be in choir, or I'm going to be really good at soccer. Because my mom struggled so much post the birth of my little sister, I really spent a lot of my time trying to, because I was 10, right? I was pretty old to be having a baby in the house. And a lot of time trying to create a semblance of normal for my little sister. So when I was at home, there was a lot of nurturing and caretaking that was happening there. And then I really loved going to school and being involved in school. And as I think back on it, maximizing that experience there really became my passion because that's actually when I got to be a kid, right? And that's when I got to go and learn and watch other families and see other scripts where maybe the mom wasn't struggling with mental health. So probably not as exciting of an answer as someone else's passions that they were able to develop and that, played into kind of who they became professionally. I think this is, obviously, if you really got into it, probably a key driver into my successes now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've talked about this at length in terms of like, I feel like there's a lot of moments when you're growing up that form some of your later years. Obviously, that's not a secret. So, as you were deciding if I want to go to college or life, where did those kind of conversations lead to? And, how did you end up, where you went to college and deciding what you wanted to do?
Yeah, because that's not something that my parents had even imagined. They had parents who were, it was let's just get to America, right? So this was it was, you know, they were they got married very early and built a family, and that's what they were doing. So they weren't, they didn't have the background or knowledge to provide that direction. So I do vividly remember coming home, and I was a good, strong student, saying, you know, I want to go to college. And, you know, I was hesitate to even share this part of the story because I don't want people to think, gosh, that's terrible. But you only know what you know, right? And so the reassurance at that time from my parents were, you know, basically, don't worry, you'll get married and you'll be able to have a family. So you don't need to do that. In essence, it was going to be a waste of time and money. And I remember thinking that's really an absurd answer, but it was, they weren't wrong, right? I did grow up and I got married and I had a family, but it wasn't either or, it was and. So at the time I attended Bellevue College and then was going to transfer to the University of Washington and ended up moving to California, where I attended Cal State University Hayward, studying business administration with a concentration in marketing management, and which has obviously played really well into what I do now in the travel industry. So it wasn't the traditional 4-year college experience that, you know, I prided myself in giving to my daughters, but it was illustrative of hard work and what you go through as a first generation family member getting educated, and it's something I really value. And actually now I see, you know, college is so much more accessible to so many. And yet there are still a number of kids like me at the time where you're going to go to community college and then you're going to transfer. And I find myself guest lecturing at our local Cal State University. And I'm on the advisory board for the sustainable hospitality program there because I feel very, very strong in making sure that those students know you can go to community college, you can go to the Cal State school into that system, and you can build a really, really big, great career.
I think that's one of the most interesting and inspiring parts of your story that I've admired.
Yeah. I mean, and what I would say too, Grace, is that I'm doing exactly what many do. It's like I've told my daughters, you know, work as hard as you can, get into the best college you can go to, and we'll go from there. And that's great. They're graduating, you know, with certain pedigrees. And yet if they don't apply the hard work to it, it's kind of in vain, you know. So I accomplished my education, what I wanted to do, and it was in 6 years, not in 4 years. And I added in the hard work piece of it. So there is not one path to getting to where you want to go, or maybe where you don't even want to go, but where you end up.
Yeah. I'm going to touch into the hard work side of things because that's a big part of your personality, but I want to tie it into some of your career story. So I want to go from where we ended up in college. How in the world did you end up in the travel industry? That is not something that most people end up in, let alone decide is their career path. So walk me through, you graduated college.
Yep.
Where did you end up after that?
I was living in the San Francisco area, and it's funny because I was working for a company that it was a chemical distributor. So they were, you know, to some of the oil refineries and to, you know, you'll see things like in the windows to absorb moisture, but it was a distributor. And it's ironic that now I really lead a company that is a distributor, right? So never really thought that much about it, but I would walk to lunch, and there was a travel agency on the corner, and I would be one of those people, Grace, that would walk in and would grab a brochure. Just never dawned on me how these people make money or why they have their, I mean, never even thought about it. And so I think as I finished college and I was wanting to see the world, right? Truly, it had just been to and from our family's farm in North Dakota. I saw on the back page of the San Francisco Chronicle, because that's where you looked for jobs then, that Club Med was hiring for a business development manager. I had a complete lack of awareness that the travel industry was even an industry, let alone the big, robust economic engine that we are part of. But I wanted to work for a company with international business. So I knew at the very least I would probably end up flying to a headquarters. So Club Med, being a French headquartered company, was interviewing. So I interviewed and I had no industry experience, but soon I found myself making sales calls to travel agencies in Northern California, and learned early on that the success is not at all about selling the product, as I found, you know, how my education supported them, you know, that marketing management piece supported the travel advisors in growing their business. And so I spent 3 to 4 years there. And then before joining Travel Impressions, right after they had been acquired by American Express and were needing to launch their efforts west of the Mississippi.
Wow. So, okay. For anyone listening that's maybe not a part of the travel industry, Club Med, can you share briefly what they do as well as Travel Impressions?
Just yeah. context. Yeah, yeah, I know, because there is, that's a really fun part about when I guest lecture at the local university, because I talk about, yes, we're this major economic force in, you know, in the world, you know, but you've got finance people and you've got HR people, you've got all different disciplines that support, you know, the support of business like any other business. So Club Med was one of the original all-inclusive. So it is, it's a brand, it's a group of hotels that really, very, very, very social, very active. One of the very first all-inclusives where you could go and you could stay and that, you know, all your meals are included, that all the activities, everything there from like, you know, different sports from soccer to circus to theater. I think a big differentiator for them was that their staff was also about being social with the guests. But had resorts all over the world. And so when I went to work for Travel Impressions American Express Vacations, they're a wholesale company. So what they do or did at the time is they, which is very similar to what Classic Vacations does, except with, you know, a little bit of a different market, is they market different hotels. So, you know, hundreds or thousands of hotels worldwide, they package them. So they take the hotel piece of it, they bring in the air piece, maybe activities, travel protection, and they resell that through the travel advisor.
So before we jump into Classic, because clearly mm-hmm. those are, you know, pretty comparable business model, why would people create that even as a business? Like why did that work so well? Or why was that even a successful business? I think a lot of people might, you know, even if they're a travel advisor that's newer to the industry, might be interested in learning like why those business models tend to be successful.
Yeah. And the best example I was on a panel this morning and just gave it is that if you think about anything that you buy, right? So I always use the example of a Veronica Beard dress, or mm-hmm. you could use Golden Goose sneakers or really anything. Is that if you're going to say, let's just say Golden Goose sneakers or Nike sneakers for that matter, you could buy them back then, right? So our company, you know, Classic was founded 46, 47 years ago. But take Nike 46 or 47 years ago, you probably didn't have, first of all, you didn't have online shopping. You also needed to get in your car and go somewhere to buy your tennis shoes, right? And so in that instance, maybe you had to go to the Nike store, right? So then eventually you have department stores, and department stores start carrying, you know, they start carrying your Nike tennis shoes, but they also carry your Bobbi Brown lip gloss, or they also might take, you know, I'm looking around at they might sell the champagne glasses, and then they also have dresses, right? So why would you, so a hotel is to Classic Vacations or, you know, American Express Vacations at that time, but what Bobbi Brown lip gloss is or Golden Goose sneakers or a Veronica Beard dress is to a high-end department store. So back to your question, why is, if I own the business, I want to have different distribution channels, right? Because not everybody's necessarily going to know about my brand, but they are going to know about Nordstrom. So they're going to know to walk into that store and that you're going to get advice. That's what we get from travel advisors. That's what travel advisors get from us. And then in terms of if I actually know what I want, but I might want other things, it's going to maximize my time walking in. And then I'll add one last piece of it is that when I think about shopping online, is that chances are, or really just needing something at all, I'm getting ready to go on this, I'm at one of our top performers events, and I wanted a new dress for Saturday night. I didn't have time to drive up to San Jose to get the new dress that I wanted. So I was able to go, I could go online. Didn't want to go on to the dress, for the dress, because they're not going to get it to me in time because they're a small company, right? It was a boutique company. So if I go on to Nordstrom, I immediately log in, all my information's there. I've been a Nordstrom card member for 15 years. I know they're going to do 2-day shipping for me for free. And I know that I can probably also get the new workout, you know, the workout shorts that I might want to have as well. And it's going to get to me before I go on my trip. So there's convenience, there's buying practice, you know, customer likes and dislikes. So that's probably the easiest analogy or example that I can give for somebody who's not in our industry of why you would want to shop there. And then of course, there's a number of reasons why you would want as a consumer to have your travel purchased through, you know, somebody that's bringing together all components of your package.
No, it's a brilliant way of explaining it. I feel like most times, you know, it's really hard for me to describe it to anyone that's outside of the industry or learning about the industry, what, for example, classifications would be beneficial for. It's a very clean way of explaining it.
I would just add is that, you know, it's use the Veronica Beard dress as an example. There were, you know, last year I was going to go to an event in Dallas with a customer and I didn't know which size of dress I wanted. So I ordered two directly from the manufacturer, going against what I would normally do because I thought, okay, I just want to get these two quickly. Well, by the time I got them and got back from my travels, I was like, oh, well, I'm going to return this one because this was actually the size I needed. They're like, oh yeah, you passed our return policy. So now you can only have a credit. Well, I didn't want a credit. I didn't want to buy something else from there. And so that was really frustrating to me, where knowing if I would have just done what I would normally do as far as buying patterns and gone to Nordstrom, there would have never been questions. I would have just been able to return it because part of that's economies of scale, right? I'm able to shop there more often. They buy also with economies of scale. So it just benefits the consumer.
Yeah. And the way it relates to travel too, obviously there's buying power. So you're suggesting the different policies that maybe companies would have allow for a little bit more flexibility or understand buying practices a little bit better. But also I think in moments like COVID or other certain situations where, you know, there's extenuating circumstances, there's, I don't know if that makes it more complicated or less, or having someone to be able to protect customers or businesses, but it does help in those moments. There's probably a bit more policies surrounding these things, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, we just had customers that were in London and they got to the property. They chose it with their travel advisor and they got there and it wasn't what they wanted. So if they had booked directly with that property, they may have just been stuck with that, right? Or they may have had to find, if it was a big brand, you know, let's say a Marriott or Hyatt, maybe there was other ones. By working with Classic, they were able to reach out to our customer service team and say, this property, while we picked it in conjunction with our travel advisor, isn't meeting our expectations. And then so we as a company are able to open up and say, okay, here's the entire London portfolio. Let's fix this for you now. We'll fix everything else later. So it works.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. That totally makes sense. So we touched briefly or kind of jumped around what Classic does. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, you kind of explained it eloquently in the terms of like Nordstrom as an example. What would you describe? Actually, take a step back. How did you even get to Classic before we even jump into the business?
Well, if you're okay with it, I mean, I can actually just start where I transitioned into a leadership role within the travel industry. And so I was living in Southern California and we had decided that we wanted to move to Carmel. And so that is on the Central Coast. And this is almost 20 years ago. So it's not at a time where there's not a lot of work from home. Mm-hmm. You're definitely, I was in sales at that point in time, Grace. So you needed to be kind of in a major metropolitan area because you've got more travel advisors there. You know, so the move to Carmel for us was, you know, in addition to its beauty and small town charm and artist colony and Pebble Beach, all the things that people think about when they hear Carmel. For me, the Valley really reminded me of that kind of that simple, idyllic childhood. And that was the environment that I wanted to raise my family in. And so our VP of sales at the time, Charlie Galena, he had heard that I was going to be resigning and I didn't report to him. I would have never in a million years thought about going to him. So I just figured that was my only option was to resign. He said, I mean, I vividly remember exactly where we were standing. And he said, why would you do that? And I said, well, I'm going to move, you know, 6 hours away. And I what would I do? And he said, well, what you would do is you would look at the company and see where there are gaps, write a few job descriptions of where you think you can make a difference. Grace, I will tell you three of the values or principles that I've really carried through my career from that experience were about being nimble, being curious, right? I had to turn and Google how to write a job description, but then I really had to think about things. And I think the most important one is don't take away someone's choice. So, and that moment when I was talking to our VP, Charlie Galena, he was like, we don't want to lose you. So I was looking at it saying, my job is here. It's based here. I want to build my life there. And I have always been very unapologetic about what that should look like coming together, but I wasn't even going to have the conversation with him. And that being nimble piece is that they were nimble. It's like, it's not just one way. So we, one of the things we were doing at the company at the time is we had launched into, doing some private labeling. So we were doing Aeromexico vacations and Delta vacations, and then we were pitching United vacations. So I wrote up a job description to become manager of brand development. And a large part of that job was creating marketing initiatives for the sales organization. Brand management complicated their lives immensely. Salespeople want to know exactly what they're selling and they want to show up. So we had travel impressions, and then there was American Express vacations. And then now there were these other ones. And so juggling two brands, and now we're going to add these others in. And so what was the lesson I have learned from that is that while these people were not my direct reports, my job was still to support their success in sales and to get them to support the brands. So I had to create a demand internally. And if you think about marketing, the definition of marketing is creating a demand. I had to create a demand internally for what I wanted to get done. And I had to tee them up for them to create a demand externally. This gave me the opportunity to build programs that they implemented that would support their success. That's just a large part of leadership, right? I just said it this morning, my job and every employee at my company's job is the success of customers, the success of suppliers through the success of employees. So this gave me, even though I didn't have direct reports at the time, it gave me my best opportunity at leadership. It gave me the best opportunity to stay with the company that I was with for 15 years. It fast-tracked me to becoming a director of sales and director of sales. And then, of course, you know, when I, you know, transitioned to Classic Vacations, which I think we'll talk about.
So there's two things that you talked about in there that I think are so brilliant. Creating a demand internally. So many times, so often, especially when you're in a larger organization or even a small organization, a lot of times it matters to get the teammates that you're working with on board. So did you realize that there was maybe not tension, or maybe there was, but they had to create this demand internally? Like, where did you realize that there was going to be some challenges there before you went externally?
You know, it was, I think, like a lot of companies, like it exists today in some companies too, is that American business says in order to grow your career, or they used to, in order to grow your career, you have to have direct reports. And the best way to grow your career is who's been here the longest, right? Mm-hmm. So for this one, it became very obvious that I was newer in my career. I was, and there were people that had been there a lot longer than me. And so there was tension. I was new to the company. I was launching a new product for us. I was doing it passionately. And I was doing it amongst people who had been there for a very long time. It's where I learned that I really had to just not take things personally. And that when you show up to ensure the success of other people, the likely outcome is that you will gain your success as well.
Sure. Absolutely. The second thing that you kind of mentioned was fast-tracking your career. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of times I look back on mine and think I accidentally skipped like 10 steps with each change of my career. And again, I'm only like 6 or 7 years into it. So giving context to that, I feel like there's some moments where you look back and you say, oh my goodness, I think I just skipped 3 steps. Do you think that move inadvertently did that for you? And
yeah, I think later this morning or this afternoon, we'll talk about, just some other things happen. I think the best, I don't know that skipping, I mean, so sales, director of sales, VP of sales, you know, you can stay on that track. I don't know that I skipped it. I think that I was willing, you know, the ladder didn't have to go straight, right? Sure. And it didn't have to stay in one department. So I think what it did is it provided me the opportunity to dabble a little bit in different disciplines, which was not the norm. But I don't know that I really skipped any steps.
Fair. Yeah. You gain additional experience outside of what traditional, which probably helped quite a bit.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, I know, you know, we talked and danced a little bit about Classic. So can you talk to me about, obviously you started building out this career at Travel Impressions, and how long were you there?
I was there for 15 years.
Yeah.
15 years of my career. It's important.
Yeah. A massive part of your career. So where were you before you went to Classic, and what kind of conspired that brought upon that transition?
Yeah. So I spent 15 years of my career there, and I'm very, as you know me well enough, I'm very loyal. I was during that time, I had my 3 daughters, and then, I was kind of getting to the point, actually. So before I moved, I guess I was had my 2, and when I'm out making sales calls and really trying to build a brand on the West Coast, it became very evident that Classic Vacations was the gold standard, especially on the West Coast, right? And it was, well, we really like you and we'd like to do business with you, but Classic does this and Classic does this. So eventually, you know, you kind of stop peddling your own product and you start asking questions, which is what any good salesperson does, to understand what the competition does so that you can make your company stronger. We had moved, so obviously I took on brand development, took over as our director of sales, senior director of sales. You know, time goes by fast, and you know, about just over 11 years ago, I was really, you know, at a point where I wanted to grow my career, and I didn't really know how to do that. So companies were still not as decentralized, especially as it related to leadership. I knew that that was going to be, you know, wanting to move in that direction, especially if I was going to stay in this space, and I wanted to be the best company in the industry, which would be Classic Vacations. But they were an elusive group. I mean, I did not know how to crack into them. And in fact, I don't know. I mean, I hate to think that they were elusive just because they were just so much better. Or we were so much better at the time than anybody else, but it was, I don't know. I mean, in fact, one time I was sitting on the airplane and a former president of Classic Vacations was sitting by me, and I was like, this is great. I've manifested this. I'm going to have a conversation, but I was kept at a distance. So I made a call to my dear friend, Alex Sharp, and I said to him, hey, I'm ready for more, right? I'm ready, ready for more. And I don't even know how to go about doing that. Who do I reach out to without them thinking that I'm not loyal to my existing company? And is she going to do this? It's crazy self-talk, right? So he had suggested to me that I reach out and call my predecessor. And, you know, eventually I reached out. We started having great conversations. And within those conversations, it led us back to that same place, Grace, is that, look at the company, tell us where there are gaps, write a job description. I was like, oh gosh, here we go again. I know how to do this time though. And we made a decision to bring me on, I think as at the time, director of sales and strategic accounts. And the conversations were very pointed in those early days. It was, my predecessor really asked the questions, what's your end goal? What does your career path look like? What would your ultimate job be? And I thought, wow. And as cliche as it sounds, Sheryl Sandberg had, written the book Lean In. And it was one of the first times where it was, ask for your place at the table, go forward, doesn't have to go straight. So I thought, I have nothing to lose here. And I said to my predecessor at the time, listen, I am a really engaged mom. I'm a really engaged wife. My family matters immensely to me, but so does my career. Like, I have a relationship with my job. I have a relationship with my career. And there's no better way of phrasing it. I said, so here's the thing. For the next, 10 years of my life, there are 5 days, three birthdays, the annual Mother's Day tea and the Halloween parade when the kids were little. I said that I'm not going to be all in. The other 360 days, you have me. And eventually I'd like to run this company or another company. He basically looked at me and said, come and do a good job, earn your stripes, and good things will happen. And we never had the conversation again. we just didn't. And so I came in and, I've got my style and way of doing things. And about 4 years later, he asked me to take over our groups division as general manager and vice president of our groups division. And during that time, we took the division from maybe 10 to 35% of our business. But I'll never forget Grace. He and I had such a good working dynamic. I said, well, that's an operations job. I'm not an operations person. And he goes, this gives you a chance to run your own P&L. And, if you want to run this company or another company someday, you want to have that experience. And I quickly said, yes, but these are the parts of my job, current job, that I don't want to give up. And I think the conversation was humorous, but it was like, hey, if you want to do those pieces of your old job and all these pieces, fine, I'm not going to pay you more. Knock yourself out. So I said, good, because I'm not going to give these things up. Yeah. So that was, that was maybe 4 years into it. And then of course I'm in my, my third year as CEO. And I will say recently when I was back in New York a couple of weeks ago, I was with Luxury Roundtable and was on a panel, and, they were asking about questions about, how do you manage up? How do you manage sideways? And how do you manage down? And, Mickey had, the gentleman that runs it had told the group, you've got your sales and marketing tracks. He said, but if anybody wants to get to the C-suite, you really have to have had the opportunity to have P&L responsibilities. So I am always grateful for that. I'm not saying you can't get there in another way, but having that P&L responsibility and the ability to, again, going back to that original job, support all disciplines and to inspire all disciplines is, created success in that groups division, which obviously set me up for being able to take on this, you know, this final role here at Classic Vacations.
Sure. And obviously, again, another chance for you to step outside of your initial ladder that you were going up and take on additional responsibilities, learn outside of it. And obviously
yeah. And being comfortable. I mean, I was, you know, you can talk about how important work ethic is to me, but I would, you know, I'd much rather if I was interviewing someone or having a conversation, understanding someone's resourcefulness and is so much more interesting to me. I mean, it's great. If I meet you and we have a conversation, you know absolutely everything, great. I'm always going to want to have an interesting conversation with you. But I really value the people that are so quick to say, you know, I have no idea, but I can call Jim or I can call, you know, I can call Joelle or whoever I can call. Resourcefulness is so critical. And when you are, when you finally get to whether it's running a department or running a company, it's really about being surrounded by, being resourceful with the people you've surrounded yourself with.
So resourcefulness, that's obviously a key trait that you look for in bringing in or, you know, leading up and bringing up new talents. Mm-hmm. I personally have my list of traits that I tend to look for, but I think it's really interesting to ask different leaders what their traits are that they look for, because I think it's pretty distinctive, like show of your personality too. So yeah. Other than resourcefulness, what other either traits or experiences or things do they need to have?
And they're really the things I value. And it's, you know, it's, I mentioned like, being nimble, right? We have to, we have competing priorities in the world and life. So people that are nimble, people that assume positive intent, right? Going back to it's, I always say, you know, don't think what I think, ask me what I think, right? But assume positive intent. So nimble, assume positive intent, you know, being curious, right? That's critical. I don't like the word, you know, nice or kind. I value people being thoughtful, but I really, for me, people that want to make things meaningful for others, that's a trait that I look for. And it doesn't have to be 100% across the board with everybody. But then the last two are the most important, really, that show up, right? Those, you know, show up. I would say we all carry boxes. It's not beyond any of us. And then that piece of, you know, not taking away anybody's choice. It is, if I owe you a spreadsheet today, Grace, and I'm like, I'm just swiped out, you know, so I'm going to be late. I'll get it to her tomorrow. That's fine. But ultimately what I've done is I've taken away your job performance. And I take that really personally. I don't ever want to do that for anybody. And, you know, as you're rising through the ranks, you're thinking about, I don't want to take away anybody's choice that maybe is my leader. And then when you get to this job, you want to make sure that you're maximizing the choices for the people that are on your team, your customers and your suppliers.
So you've built obviously an incredible, you know, career for yourself, and also you're managing a good number of employees. Do you mind giving me context? You don't have to give numbers or anything like that, but if you have a general scale, you could just give people context, you know, just so that people can understand the size of Classic, because it is a massive business, but I don't think anyone, you know, really quite understands what kind of company you're leading right now.
Yeah. So we, you know, give or take the day, right now we're about 270 employees. We're hiring. So there's that. I'll just throw that out there.
Good.
We are in 28 states and 6 or 7 countries. So we are a fully remote organization. That is great in many ways and complicated in others. That, you know, we have, you know, product team and sales and marketing and finance and, you know, our contact center team, our solutions, business intelligence, our development teams, you know, HR, anything that it takes to run a business, we have here. So it's big. And I don't mind saying, you know, we're right now we're sitting at about half a billion a year in sales and growing.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. It's amazing just to, I never even understood the scale of Classic. And when we first started initially getting to know each other, I think someone had mentioned it to me on the side, like, do you understand how big of a company Melissa's running? And I was like, frankly, I have no idea. And so it's really fantastic what you've been growing and building. But obviously you stepped into this role about 3 years ago now, right? Mm-hmm. So what for you is kind of the bigger vision, you know, not necessarily in detail, but for you, what is your kind of goal for whether it's Classic or the luxury industry? What's kind of your hope for your leadership role?
I'm not going to go get in marketing's camp, but I say, you know, it's we're the luxury you want with the speed that you need, right? So I think that, you know, growing in the space where we have our product, which we do now, our preferred product online. So the demands on today's travel advisor are very, very strong so that they can still, right? They have the ease of going to Nordstrom.com at 12 o'clock at night or, you know, 11 o'clock at night when they're watching Yellowstone doing emails, but they still have all of the depth of classic vacations, 47 years of relationships, continuing to grow in that space. So yes, I would say, you know, within the next 4 or 5 years, I'd like to see us double, but I don't want to see us double, you know, forsaking the level of service that we have. You know, there's some organic growth there, Grace, and, you know, making sure that our products and our, you know, services are available to the travel advisors, you know, when they want them, where they want them, to continue to make them more efficient. And so they're profitable. I think going, you know, deeper and wider into our destinations, I would love the opportunity to buy a company or two or three, you know, that heavy curation in destination that destination management companies offer. What we offer. So what we offer in Europe, right? We bought a destination management company, you know, 27, 28 years ago. So I know how impactful that can be. That's why we are repeatedly named number one tour operator wholesale company for Europe. It's because we have that there. So whether we build that or buy that, you know, I would like to continue to go down that path. And then I want to be an extraordinary place of employment for people that they can come in and that they can have demanding and fulfilling careers, that they can build the life that they want for their families. You know, and just one of the benefits and perks of being in this business is that I want as many people to see the world as possible, because I think that that's our shot at doing really, really well while we're here on this planet, right? Is that humans are inherently good. And the more we go see other humans, the more we trust in that statement.
You've always had a very humane approach to business, which I really admire. You constantly talk about your family, your kids. You talk about the world and the people that you're working with and trying to impact them better. Mm-hmm. I think it's not necessarily rare, because I think a lot of people strive for that, but it is clearly top of mind for you. I'm so curious, like, where for your personal life, you know, where do those influences feed back and forth to each other? Like, do you get to share kind of these experiences with your daughters? I've had the pleasure of meeting two of them. Like, where do you get to enjoy this part of the business with them or with your family? Or is it more that you keep the two apart? Because it seems like they're very cohesive together.
Yeah, I do. I mean, it is something I have very, very much valued, is that sharing, not even just the travel piece with my family, it is sharing the relationships that I have, right? I mean, I talked a little bit about, you know, I learned early on that you are going to pull from other people's scripts. So that has valued me. I have amazing, amazing females, whether it's, you know, a high school friend's mom or a teacher, people I still keep in touch with. So even though that was in a very small town, the world becomes my small town based on the business that we're in. So I don't like to keep them separate at all. I love that my daughters will have relationships with a general manager or director of sales or somebody that they've met in the industry, that there's a back and forth and conversations. If my daughter's working on something, I'm like, oh, you know, you should call so-and-so over at the Westin, you know, Hawaii, and ask what they think about that. So I do try to integrate them because that works for me. And I think that, you know, I don't keep them separate. It's for me, it's about, you know, work-life integration.
Yeah, I think there's a part of me that's just from hearing you talk about this side of your life, it's given also me permission. And that's why I bring it up, because I think there's a lot of women that'll listen to this. And I like bringing my fiance Max to supplier dinners now and meeting people within my work, because I think there's an element of humanity to it that gets people to understand me better and build deeper relationships and things like that. And I think from talking to you, I've gotten a lot of permission to do some of those things. Yeah. Is there any other learnings that you've gained over the years being someone that's, whether it's as a CEO or just a female in this industry, that you've learned from and kind of taken with you?
I mean, I would just say, just because you're talking about like the, we are human beings doing business with human beings. If I'm going to have an hour long conversation with a customer, 20 minutes of that's probably going to be about business. And then the other 40 minutes is really going to be all the things that make me want to do business with that person. Right. So whether it's your fiance or whether it's sharing, you know, I saw someone this morning, they're like, oh, the last time we talked, we were both getting ready to send our oldest to college. How are things going? And what have your learnings been like? That's what makes the relationships rich. And when you go back to what I said, is that I have a relationship with my work, right? That is a relationship that is 100% my own, that I rely largely on myself to make this a successful relationship. And So I think that those pieces are really important. We were taught, you know, just kind of on the balance thing, I would say, you know, as far as learnings, early on, I balanced it really well. I mean, I talked about saying, you know, that it's, you know, I don't want my biggest final job for 10 years, right? Because I wanted to, I knew that I would try to take it on. And I knew that it would wreck me. It would have been, I couldn't have done this job. And I wouldn't have done this job when the kids were younger and at homes. The confidence to say, I'm not going to sacrifice the bigger picture of what I want in my life, which was really all of it, but just the timing was funky, right? I wasn't going to be on somebody else's agenda. That I was really good at balance, and that got me to here. Now, Grace, I'm sure you'll see him in the not too distant future. If you asked one of my kids if I'm balanced right now, I don't think they would say that. I would think, you know, they would probably say I work a lot. What I would say is sometimes when people hear the word balance, and I'm fleshing this out with you right now, when we hear the word balance, the thing that pops up for me immediately is people asking you, are you having boundaries towards your work? And I would be interested if we could do a poll right now, I'd be interested. Do other people think the same thing? And they were like, do I have boundaries for my work? I don't particularly want, for me personally, I don't need to have boundaries for my work. So if you look at, is it balance? Is it fulfillment? Or is it satisfaction? So I would not say that this is imbalanced at all. What I would say is I really love what I do. I value the opportunity to contribute to the success of my customers, success of my suppliers, as I said earlier, through the success of my employees. Work for me is like a relationship. So if you take, now I'm going to impart, you know,
I love this.
Wisdom on the unmarried woman is that you, it's the same thing I write in people's cards when they get married, is that if you show up for your marriage and you're like, well, I'm not going to do this because he's not doing that. Well, that's not going to work. That would be like saying, well, I'm not going to feed the baby tonight because he didn't feed the baby tonight. Well, then no one's going to let the baby starve. You're going to do what you need to do. So the most successful relationships are when you show up and you are contributing the very best of yourself and you're not doing everybody else's inventory. I'm not saying be taken advantage of, but it's your relationship. So I have a relationship with my work. I have a relationship with my career. It's probably not super imbalanced, but I'm so invested in it that going back to, you know, kind of the things I value, it's one of the most meaningful relationships I have. It is, I have a relationship with kind of an inanimate object, I guess. And I'm all in and it is, it's work, but it's this joint passion of people and all over the globe. So I don't know.
No, that's fantastic. I love it.
I would just say other important lessons, you know, that have come along. It's you are the company you keep. So your brand association, you know, when I come back to New York, how much I love getting people together that don't know each other at all. And it could be from all different businesses and areas because it's, you're the company you keep. I gather people together. I don't try to be everything. As I say, I want to be the one that brings all the most interesting people to the dinner party. And then I think another learning, and I'm thinking about this one a lot these days, is that if your first instinct is, how does this affect me personally? You need to check in really quickly with yourself because it is when we're part of an organization and things are happening, your first instinct should be, how is this affecting me personally? So that's one that I'm kind of fleshing out. I'm still learning.
Yeah, absolutely. I think obviously we have a much smaller team. We don't have 270 employees. We have about 6 at the moment, so much smaller scale. But I learn a lot of this as well from my dad's florist. We've talked about this at length of how important my dad's florist is in teaching me all the things before I have to go through it. And he is always going through that learning experience with working with employees and also our family and trying to balance the two. And there's always that moment of trying to figure out how to explain changes or processes that you're putting into the business. Obviously, coming in as a newer CEO, I'm sure there's a lot of things that get changed and moved around, even with any role you take on. And it's always a challenge figuring out, A, how to balance all these things, how to manage the change within the company and externally. So I'm sure it takes a lot of learning.
And I think, too, is that it's that if I say, well, we're going to do this differently, that doesn't mean how you've always been doing it is wrong. Yeah. Quite the opposite. It's pretty amazing because it got us to where we are. So if you think about changes today, so right now I'm very, you know, there's a lot of work being done on my leadership team, and building an extraordinary leadership team is so important. Now, that doesn't mean that my predecessor or other leaders didn't do it right. I mean, they got this. We are the number one global luxury wholesale company. Clearly, they did it right. It's hard, though. If you've been part of that, you can say, well, you're changing it. So that means that how we've always done it isn't, you're saying it's not right. And quite the opposite. I'm saying that was amazing. And now we're going to take that, because we are right now, for us, we are in the three best years in the history of the company. So if you're here today, you've already decided to be part of change, even if you think you're not part of it, right? So
absolutely. Absolutely. And I think also you grow as you have new learnings, as the world mm-hmm. changes, as you get, you know, you being a very curious person, the organization, I'm sure you're trying to have the entire organization act like that too. If everyone's being curious, you're ultimately going to learn how to improve things and keep working at that, because obviously your competitors are definitely trying their hardest to become number one as well.
Yeah. And you want customer-driven strategy. You want employee-driven strategy. I mean, that's the beautiful part of this job, is that I want to bring together a great group of people that see all the things that I don't see.
Yeah. Well, I want to pivot a little bit, if it's okay with you, because I think there's a group of people that, whether they're my age, older, younger, but just individuals looking to build out either their own business or grow within one. And I know that you mentor a lot of young individuals, especially at your alma mater. So if you could give me just, you know, some of your favorite learnings that you have for anyone starting out or looking to grow their personal career.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorite learnings that you like to impart on them?
Yeah. And just the like advice, you know, first of all, do it. I mean, absolutely. Yeah. Just do it. Just, this is an incredible industry. And that's not to say that there aren't other incredible industries, but this is, if you want something that contributes to what I said before, is that proving to the world that humans are good and that there are great humans from every corner of this great planet, you get to do it in our industry. If you want something that is an absolute economic engine, that is our industry. If you want to work for a big brand and business, you can do that in our industry. If you truly believe in responsible tourism and, you know, and there's somebody out on the beach that rents surfboards, you get to support their business. It's I love our industry's place in the world. Really show up. It is truly, truly such a simple piece of advice, but show up, be all in. Let's see, what your resume lacks, you can easily make up for in work ethic, and never underestimate that. And, you know, in fact, I would say, you know, lead with that. If I sat down to interview someone today, and they said to me, I'd like to talk to you about my work ethic, I think I would have my breath taken away.
Immediately. I would be like, you have to keep talking. You're done. You're hired immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's so I had a customer one time, I remember her saying to me, dim your light for no one, but just because your resume doesn't maybe have the years of experience, or maybe your resume has years of experience, but it's just in an industry, you can, we can teach you just about anything. Right. But we can't teach you work ethic, and we can't teach you passion, and we can't teach you that communal knowledge piece of kind of growing together. Because, you know, the other piece I would say, your contributions are of equal importance. So don't take a back. If you join our industry, you know, don't take a back seat just because you're new. At our holiday party this last year, Grace, I had, you know, I mean, did people from, you know, all different walks of life and backgrounds and different tenure. So not your question was specifically about young professionals. And some of these people were, you know, much later in their career. And I had them stand in front of the room and I just said, promise me one thing. We hired you because of what you shared with us over a handful of hours in interview. Please don't come here and just become homogenized. And this is how we do it at Classic. Please bring with you, make note of it. Ask the person that's interviewing you, why are you choosing me? When I talk to our investors, I said, why me? And I have them written down in the front of a book so I can always remember why they chose me. And I would say, and then just a few others, find someone who has the willingness to share their experience and expertise. At our company, I always reference Stephen Johansson. He's one of our directors in reservations. He is always, he is a go-to person and always willing to help navigate the company or share his expertise. Always learning. Stackable credentials are amazing. I was having a conversation with our marketing team this morning. If I were a high school kid right now and I was looking to do some gig work during college, I'd go get a certification on doing WordPress, right? Yeah. Value that. And then I would say that, you know, the last couple ones, your reputation is important. It is, if you are somebody who doesn't return phone calls, everybody in the industry will know you don't return phone calls. Mm-hmm. If you are someone that returns phone calls and is genuinely interested in others and are kind, mm-hmm. your reputation is important. And then if I could fix this one, it would be my dream come true. Ask for feedback. Employee-driven feedback is so critical. I learned this the hard way. I had a leader 20 years ago that would wait until my reviews to tell me how I was doing, and that felt icky. And so I learned, and with my predecessor here at Classic, even with my investors, every time I'm on the call with one of my leaders, I say, you know, is there anything you'd like to see me doing different? Is there anything I can be doing better? And one, that eliminates this whole, you know, a 6-month list of things that I could be doing better at a mid-year review. But more importantly, my job as I'm growing, or anybody's job, if you have a leader, you want to free that leader to do what they're really good at. You don't want them to have to think about other things. So that leader, if you can take off their plate, you know, I'll use you. Great. If Grace is like, you know what, I really want to talk to Melissa about how she could be better at doing podcast interviews, but it just feels icky because I know she really tries. And so I'll just wait on that one. But if I show up to Grace and say, hey, Grace, it was a great hour and a half we just spent. If there's just one or two things that you could give me to where I could really nail it next time, what would they be? I'm a breath of fresh air for you. I'm going to get better. And you can go on to thinking about other things other than saying, gosh, I sure wish I would have had the courage to give Melissa some input today. It's a tough one. It is a tough one. Mm-hmm. I ask all the time, you know, I really want people to do it but go forth. Everybody who listens to this, go forth and do that. And I would say, I give this advice regardless of anybody's age or where they're at in their career. All of this is just, it's good for all of us.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. There's a team member, Brian, that's on our team. And pretty much every time we're on the phone, he is constantly asking, how can I alleviate your work more? How can I be doing better? And it's interesting the way he says it too, because it's not about like, he does ask, what can I be doing better? But he's also asking completely separately, saying, how can I be alleviating your workload? How can I be doing my job better so that I can make your job easier? And he does not have to do that at all, because it is not at all his job function. He's our CTO. I mean, he's doing all of our development work. So it has nothing to do with his role. And he even means it's an operational perspective, sales, admin, like anything I can be doing. And it's just brilliant. And it frees up the conversation to always be free flowing. And there's never any animosity when there's feedback given. There's never any tension. It's just open flow of communication always.
Yeah, it makes it nice. It really does. I mean, I can hear it in your voice.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Well, thank you very much for this. I like to end kind of asking a little bit more of a personal question. I personally think that I live by a few key values or stories or pieces of my life that I really hold on to dearly. And I know you've mentioned a couple, you know, with kind of your early childhood and things like that. But is there a certain kind of, for some people, it's a mantra or a one-liner. For some people, it's an experience that they hold on to. Is there a story that you can share that's really core to your personality or your value system that you think others would love to learn from?
Yeah, I don't know that it's so much a story. There have been so many examples of times where maybe I was like, I want to do that or I want that, but I'm probably not ready for it. But the number of times I have put myself out there, it's happened. Pretty much 100% of the time. So I would say, you know, be really confident in who you are and in taking the risk and putting yourself out there, because chances are you have something or you're onto something that someone else doesn't have. So but that's hard, right? Because everybody, you know, there's self-doubt in everybody. I would say, you know, just asking for what you want and giving someone insight into your dreams. You know, when I said to my predecessor, you know, I always want to go forward. It's not going to be straight. But in 10 years, I want that. Mm-hmm. I put it out there. And this is not as fluffy as just manifesting it. I had the conversation with someone. And just so it's really, really being confident that, you know, your path is your path. But you have to articulate it, because hope is not a strategy over here.
Hope is not a strategy. I love it. Fantastic. Well, thank you, Melissa, so much for doing this with me. I love learning from you, and I'm sure a lot of others will too. So thank you so much for spending the time this morning. It's been great.
Thank you, Grace.
Awesome.